do you think of it so far?
I'm not much of an art critic.
I'm not asking you for art criticism, Barnabas. Merely a few honest words of appreciation.
Honestly? Well, the perspective shot to hell. The colours could be better chosen, and the olive tree on the left looks like an overgrown stinging nettle.
Well, what the hell would you know? You're a dog.
Did I ever say I wasn't?
Barnabas the dog, standing on the steps of the little villa, is a large, black, friendly-looking Labrador Border Collie cross.
Oh, well, the light's going anyway. I'll finish it tomorrow. The colour's got better chosen, my foot. Anyway, I thought dogs were colourblind.
Yeah? That's a coincidence. I mean, looking at that painting, I thought you were colourblind. What's so funny?
Oh, you know, Barnabas, there are those who claim that for unquestioning respect and eternal devotion, all one needs is a dog.
Hey, schmuck. Devotion you've got. Perjury isn't in the job description.
I'll leave this to dry here.
Listen. There's something happening in that room round the back.
I can't hear it.
Well, you aren't a dog, are you?
Not at present, no. Come on, then.
Destruction pulls a key from his pocket as they walk to the back room.
What's in here, anyway? I mean, it's been locked as long as I can remember.
I suppose you could call this the family room.
The room is large, without windows. It is Destruction's gallery. Hanging on the walls are frames enclosing the sigils of the endless. Destiny's book, Death's Ankh, Dream's helmet, Desire's heart, Despair's fishhook ring, and Delirium's swirl. The exception is Destruction's frame. It is not empty. It bears a sword. Really old, with notches in the blade and an old bandage wrapped around the handle, a sword that must have seen continuous use for hundreds of years, sitting in the middle of its frame. In the center of the room is a round pool of water, about 6 feet across, tiled around the edge. The water is bubbling, churning, shooting little watery tentacles up into the air above it.
That was what I heard. That bubbling noise. It's that pool. What is it?
It's... I suppose you could call it an early warning system.
I don't like it. What's it warning you against?
Trouble. Big trouble.
Trays? Empty glasses? Sir? Miss?
No.
Mm-mm. Thank you.
Dream and Delirium sit together in the first class cabin on the 747. Dream sits up stiffly in his seat. Delirium is curled cat-like beside him, next to the window. Across the aisle is a woman with a little girl next to her. The woman is in her mid-30s. The little girl is about 6 or 7, with a neat dress and long straight hair, perfectly brushed, held back by an Alice band. She is asleep.
This is nice, isn't it? Well, I think it's nice. Have you ever been in an airplane before?
No.
I have. You know the best thing about airplanes, apart from the peanuts and the little silver bags, I mean... It's looking out the window at the clouds and thinking, maybe I could go walking in there. Maybe it's a special place where everything's okay. Sometimes I do go walking in the clouds, but it's just cold and wet and empty. But when you look out of a plane, it's a special world. And I like that. Hey, that person, Feral Mond, what was he?
He used to be a god. When we last met in Babylon, his sacrifices were dwindling and many of his shrines had already been abandoned. I merely suggested that he find himself another occupation.
Oh, I didn't know you could stop being a god.
You can stop being anything.
What about, our brother?
Mommy, I had a bad dream.
Really, darling?
I had a dream that I was looking for you and Daddy, and I looked in the garden, but you weren't there. So I went in the woods looking for you, but I couldn't find you. And I called out, but nobody was there.
You're a silly mouse. You can't get lost in a dream. You always wake up.
I suppose.
Mommy's gonna powder her nose. Ask the stewardess if there's anything you need.
Child?
Yeah?
Your mother was wrong. You can indeed become lost in dreams, and you may not always find yourself when you wake up.
Oh, my name's Chloe Russell.
I know.
My mommy calls me her little mouse.
Indeed.
Excuse me. Mom, the other couple in first class, are they rock and roll stars or movie stars or something? There's something very familiar about both of them. I mean, I keep thinking I know them really well, especially the man, but I know he's no one I ever met. It's like, well, at this party of Ron's, that's my ex-husband's lawyer, I saw this guy I knew as well as I knew my father. So I said hi, he said hi. Then I realized I didn't know, like, who he was. We talked about old musicals and the trouble I was having with my pool man, and he smiled and was really nice, but, like, I still didn't know his name. You follow me? Well, hey, I was doing a lot of coke at the time. This was 10 years ago. That was before I realized, like, you have to be really open to the universe. So these days I won't even let Chloe drink Diet Cola because of the aspartame. I don't trust that shit.
Oh.
Oh, the party. I'm sorry. Eventually, the guy goes away. Half an hour later, I realized I'd been talking to Charlton Heston.
Right, I don't know. The man is very familiar. Your daughter was talking to him when you were in the bathroom.
Oh, really? Thanks.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll soon be beginning our descent into Washington, D.C., so please put your tray tables away and your seats in the upright position.
Darling, did that man say something to you?
Yes, Mommy.
Oh. What did he say?
True things.
Oh. Did he mention his name?
No. He probably hasn't got one.
Oh, don't be silly, Chloe Mouse. Everyone has a name.
Thank you for flying with us. Enjoy your stay. See you next time.
Excuse me. Will you tell me something?
Perhaps.
When I dream, sometimes I remember how to fly. You just lift up one leg, then you lift up the other leg, and you're not standing on anything, and you can fly. And then, when I wake up, I can't remember how to do it anymore.
So?
So, what I want to know is, when I'm asleep, do I really remember how to fly? And forget how when I wake up? Or am I just dreaming I can fly?
When you dream, sometimes you remember. When you wake, you always forget.
But that's not fair.
No.
Hello? Hi.
At the arrivals gate at the airport, a tall black woman, wearing a chauffeur's uniform, her hair pulled tightly back, holds a sign reading, Farrell Travel. She has a big, competent smile.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Ruby. You'll be the folks Farrell asked me to take care of. Welcome to the United States. Will you both follow me, please? Through that door, the one with no exit on it.
Morpheus and Delirium follow Ruby down some stairs. Delirium holds onto the wall on the way as if to check it is real. The door they arrive at has a sign. Authorized personnel only. Passes must be worn at all times.
Farrell told me you wouldn't have any bags. He also said you weren't to go through customs or immigration. You know what that costs around here? So, what are you? The mob? Or eloping royalty? No, it's okay. Don't answer. I don't want to know.
They step out of a door onto a small staff parking lot by the terminal building.
Well, out here's the car. Farrell said you'd like something classical, and this Morgan was as classical as we've got without yanking something from a museum. It's an antique, but they've promised it'll run fine.
They walk across the lot towards a low-slung four-seater convertible that looks like it was built in the 1930s.
Okay, here it is.
Neat!
Ruby pulls on a chauffeur's cap and opens the side door, tipping the front seat forward.
Can I drive?
No.
But I want to drive. I bet I'd be really good.
No.
Here, you'll like it in back.
Thank you.
So, Farrell faxed me the itinerary. You sure are going to do some serious traveling.
Yes.
I wanted to be the driver.
Okay, let's see. First up, we pay a visit to the lawyer. I got it written down here somewhere. Oh, yeah, here it is. Weird name, hmm? Okay, folks, hold on tight. We're off to see your Mr. Capex.
What's the name of the word for things not being the same always? You know, I'm sure there is one, isn't there? There must be a word for it. The thing that lets you know time is happening. Is there a word?
Beats me, hon.
Change.
Oh, I was afraid of that.
The long day in the Northlands. The sun has not set for over a month. Even now, at midnight, it hangs pale and silver and cold above the horizon. The midnight sun. On the other side of the sky, the lights of the Borealis flicker and explode and swirl in surges of plasma, of retinal purple, firework yellow, electric green. This is a midwinter display, thinks the older man. There is something deeply unnatural about seeing the northern lights in midsummer. The Lapps believe that it is unwise in any way to attract the attention of the dancing northern lights, or they will carry you off into the sky to be one with them forever. The older man is old enough to know how rarely this happens. Still and all, he is uneasy. This old man, the older man, dressed in sewn reindeer leather clothes, stays awake through the night that never comes, staring sadly at the lights in the sky. He leans on his stick. In the morning, the sun climbs higher into the sky, and the color of the sky transmutes from leaden gray to perfect cerulean blue. Disturbed deep in his being, the older man walks 20 miles in a slow circle at a steady lope to check his death traps. He made the death traps himself. They were made of interwoven thongs of reindeer leather, tied into intricate cat's cradles hung from the branches of the stunted trees. He tests each one, trying the knots, ensuring they are whole. To the north and east and west, the traps are untouched. The southern trap, however, has been torn apart. A big death is on its way then, from the south. The older man eyes the sky. The sun has passed its zenith, and the shadows are streaming. Pleased he is that the shadows are clear and crisp. Carefully, the older man removes his clothes, his boots, his jerkin, his hat, and his trousers. Then piles them all of a heap. He is scrawny and hairless and old. He pisses around them in a wide circle, and they turn to stone. A moment of stretching, of rending beneath the full sun, and it is over. He is a bear, then, with the shadow of a man. He eyes his shadow, then bares his teeth, lowers his muzzle, and begins to chew. To bite off your shadow is neither easy nor painless. It demands a single-mindedness that is almost unknown this day. Still, at the end, the huge bear snuffles contentedly and stares at the shadow which lies on the ground.
Listen, you to me now, O my shadow. For the present, you are Lieb Olmar, the Alderman. I am but a nothing bear, nameless and without any manner of interest. My death is now your death, and my doom, your doom. Yours and yours alone, oh my shadow.
Then the bear lumbers around the stone cairn, squirting rank bear piss as it goes, and its clothes are no longer stones. Its shadow, walking tenderly on feet that still feel the power and tearing and edge of sharp bear teeth, puts on the clothes. The bear eyes it critically. It has, to his mind, little of his majesty. There is not fire in its eyes. Still, it will serve.
Go.
He watches his shadow limp away, already forgetting that it was his shadow, knowing only that it was the Alderman. And finally, the bear without a shadow forgets that it had ever been the Alderman, that it has ever been anything other than a bear. On all fours, the bear lumbers north in the pale, unending light of the evening sun.
The Sandman, Act 3, Episode 7. Brief Lives, Part 4.
The other side of the sky. Up there, and his shadow. Departed secrets. Twinkle's a nice word.
So's Viridian.
Throne keys.
A treatise on optics.
The perils of smoking in bed.
A suburban American street, leafy, tree-lined. Late on a sunny afternoon. The low-slung Morgan convertible cruises along, its top down. Ruby drives in her chauffeur's uniform, Delirium beside her. Morpheus is in the back seat, inspecting each passerby on the sidewalk.
What are you looking at?
Delirium turns in her seat to speak to him. She would rest her head in Morpheus's lap, but he would never permit such liberties, not even from a member of the family. But she would, if she could.
You're looking for something, aren't you? I mean, the way you keep looking at things, you're looking for some... Why don't you have proper eyes instead of those things? Everyone else in the family's got proper eyes.
Morpheus's eyes, white on black, continue to gaze out at the street.
Except Destiny.
Destiny is blind.
You keep looking at the people. Are you looking for someone? Are you looking for our brother?
We are both looking for our brother.
Excuse me, folks. This is the address. It's that house.
The house is comfortable, middle class, set with others like it on this quiet street in suburbia. It's not a spectacular neighborhood, just quietly prosperous. Ruby gets out and stands on the sidewalk, opening the passenger door for Delirium and Morpheus.
Thank you.
You want me to come in with you?
Yes.
No. Wait here, please, Ruby.
But...
I would rather we conducted this business privately, sister, if you have no objections.
The man is young, in his early 20s. He wears a suit and tie, but the suit is rumpled and the shirt is open at the collar. In one hand, he carries a bottle of beer. He looks tired, as if he hasn't slept in a couple of days.
Yeah?
We are looking for Bernard Capax.
You want Dad? You haven't heard? Jesus. Won't you come in? I'm Danny Capax. You're friends of my father's?
Not as such.
I met him ages ago. Ages and ages and ages.
Jenny, who is it?
Just a couple of friends. That's my mom. She's been kind of out of it. Dad, listen, Dad died yesterday.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Can I, get you anything? A beer?
No.
My dad, I mean, I was always kind of disappointed in him, you know? Not disappointed. Shit. What's the word? Embarrassed. And now, I don't understand anything. It's just... Look, come down here. I'll show you. I had to come back from college, make the arrangements this morning. The guy, mortician, kept talking about the departed, as if Dad just had to step out in a hurry. They gave us his keys, so we opened his office down here. We opened his filing cabinets. The funeral's tomorrow. Jesus. My dad, he was skinny. He had a dumb mustache and a ponytail. So he'd look younger, I suppose. He was a lawyer. Come in.
The basement office is not very big. There's a desk in there with some papers. A photograph on the wall shows Bernie, a young Mrs. Capax, and an 11-year-old Danny. There's a heavy-looking filing cabinet and a briefcase sitting on a chair by the door. A little tube of bubble mixture is on one corner of the desk. Delirium picks it up.
My father was the most boring man I ever met. I liked him okay. He was my dad, you know? But I thought I knew him. Look at this shit. Look at it. Jesus, my father. Dad, good old Bernie Capax. You know what these are? Krugerrand coins. Worth a fortune. Gold Krugerrands. 200 of them. And in the safe, one bag of brown powder. My guess is smack. One bag of white powder. I tasted it, and it made my tongue go all numb, so I figured it's probably cocaine. I never did drugs. Dad used to come down really heavy on us. He didn't even like Mom drinking, you know? Guns and knives are in the top drawer of the filing cabinet. Next drawer down is filled with blank passports. Here, you want one? American, French, British, South African? Take your frickin' pick! Jesus.
He was my dad. He was a sweet guy, but he was so dull, you know?
Birth certificates, various names and dates, credit cards, ditto.
I mean, this is like a spy movie or Mission Impossible or something. How do we explain it to the IRS? Should we tell the police anything? Or the FBI?
There's a Picasso in the bottom drawer.
And a Matisse. And something I think may be a Da Vinci frickin' pencil drawing. What do they call them? Cartoon? There's other stuff. I mean, who the hell was he, huh? My father, who was he?
Can I have this?
The bubble mixture? Yeah, sure, whatever.
How did he die?
Ha! Yeah. I've been drinking since before breakfast, and I'm normally a one-beer guy. And Mom's just walking around like someone shot her in the brain, you know?
Bubbles.
How did your father die?
A building fell on him. Isn't that... I forget the word for it. Ironic? Dumb? Bizarre? There was some demolition work going on, and bam. Bye-bye, Daddy. Whoever you were.
Listen, I couldn't help overhearing you earlier. You said destiny was blind? Well, didn't you mean love? It's love is blind. That's the saying, isn't it?
The subject is one I find entirely lacking in interest.
Yeah. So, how is your lawyer?
Dead.
Cute. That's like the joke, isn't it? What have you got if you've got a dozen lawyers buried up to their necks in cat shit? Not enough cat shit. Ta-da! Enough with the jokes. How was he really?
Really dead?
Oh, sorry. Where do you want to go now, then?
Sister, whom do we see next?
Etain, the second thing. Look, it's on your it's on this list.
That's the one in Ohio? Gonna be a long drive. 14, 15 hours at least. I figure we'll stop in a motel tonight, start again in the morning when we're fresh. It's all on Farrell's platinum card, so money's no problem.
You wish to break our journey? Why?
Well, so we can sleep, shit, shower. What do you think?
No.
Look, Mr. High and Mighty, I don't know who you are, and I don't care. But if you think I'm driving all night for you or anyone else, you're out of your mind. Here, you want to call Farrell? You want me to? Shit, what do you think, lady, huh?
I think you're very nice. I think twinkle's a nice word. So's Viridian. I met a lady once who had an imaginary fish.
Great. Okay. Let me put it this way. We stop somewhere for the night, or I stop the car here and I quit, and you can drive all night to Ohio or Anchorage or Timbuktu if you want to without me.
As you will. It makes little difference to me.
Are you saying you don't care?
That is what I am saying, yes.
You're a scary son of a bitch, mister. Cute as hell, but scary. Let's go to a motel.
What about the lawyer? Shouldn't we see him?
He's dead.
Oh, yes. I forgot. Bubbles.
Okay. I've got us three adjoining rooms. 110, 111, and 112. Would you people like to go and eat first, or just order room service?
I have no wish to eat.
Okay, whatever. Just ring room service if you change your mind. I've got your key cards here. You know how to operate them.
Which is my room?
They're all the same. Pick one.
Very well. I will take this one. Aprite. Good night to you both.
Hey, wait a minute. You forgot your key card.
I don't think he likes keys anymore. Leave them.
Here, this one's yours. Do you know how to work them?
Keys? Sure. Figured that out ages ago. I'm not stupid or anything.
Well, I'll see you in the morning then. Good night.
Hmm.
Delirium stands in front of room 111, holding the tube of bubble mixture, its top screwed back on. She looks at the key card. Something about it doesn't please her. The card changes from a white oblong of plastic into an old-fashioned key.
That's better.
Entering the room, she flops onto the bed, unscrewing the bubble mixture. Free to experiment, Delirium blows her own kind of bubbles. There are alarm clock bubbles, donut bubbles, heart bubbles, and star-shaped bubbles. Some are as big as a foot in diameter. They float around the room, still changing shape as they do so. Inside room 112, Ruby brushes her teeth. Her name is Ruby Elizabeth Delon. She was born in Jamaica in 1962. She speaks 11 languages. She's been working for Farrell for 7 years now, and she knows what she wants. She wants to be rich. Not merely wealthy, but rich like Farrell, like a tiny handful of others she's met over the last few years.
There. That's clean as you'll ever be.
The people who are rich enough that their names will never wind up on any list of the 100 wealthiest people. Their names and faces quite unknown to the press or the world.
So, of course.
Your free viewing time is over. Please press the pay button to continue watching your movie choice.
No thanks.
Money. That's all Ruby wants.
Oh, hi. I'm in room 112. Can I book a wake-up call for 7 a.m.? That's right.
Ruby Delong is, in no particular order, a practicing Catholic, an excellent cook, a mediocre cellist, a specialist in both armed and unarmed combat, 3 weeks away from her 30th birthday, and a virgin.
Our Father, which art in heaven.
It may be unfashionable to be a virgin, but Ruby doesn't care. She wants a white wedding, and she wants it to mean something. There was a guy she liked a few years back. Liked him an awful lot, but he failed a routine credit check. Pity, really. Sometimes she still misses him. And she wants to be so goddamned rich. And she wants someone to love. And she wants to be happy.
Amen.
Tomorrow she'll be back on the road, driving Farrell's pale crazies off to their next lunatic destination. Tired. She's tired. Destiny is blind. One cigarette. A girl needs her nicotine fix, and she's already cut down to 5 a day. She draws the blue smoke deep into her lungs, feels her head go swimmy and her insides relax. She's got to give up. She really must. These things are going to kill her. It's not destiny, it's love. She was right. He was wrong. It's not destiny, it's love.
Enough bubbles.
Delirium puts down the bubbles and picks up the creased envelope from the nightstand. Sitting on the side of her bed, her feet on the floor, Delirium examines the loops and walls of her handwriting in puzzlement, trying to tease some meaning from them. then she simply lets herself go. Delirium's head smears and melts, like smoky ectoplasm, flickering and distorted, pluming like smoke from a candle flame. It's transmuted, physically and spatially, into something else utterly. Pure delirium.
Capax is dead. There's no doubt of that. There is nothing in his space but darkness and cold and silence. 18 of the second look. Things moving fast. Strange impressions. Difficult to locate. No longer where she was. It's been destroyed. Is she still even in this plane? Refuge. She's taken refuge somewhere.
Delirium extends her flickering consciousness. An old power? Something obscuring her vision? Possibly. Let it ride. Let it ride.
Libel, Ma. The Alderman.
She knows the feel of him.
An impression of cold and something insubstantial, hard to touch.
And it's gone.
The dancing woman and... yes.
Contact. The image is watery and too bright for detail, but Delirium can see what looks like a dressing room lined with mirrors. There's a blonde girl in a bikini bottom with mermaid shells on her top. She's vomiting into a sink in a small back room area.
Christ, Tiffany. What the hell have you been doing?
Nothing. I haven't done nothing. Probably like flu or something. I'm gonna be sick again.
Ishtar. A tall woman in her mid-20s, Middle Eastern in appearance with very, very long hair, is rubbing Tiffany's back gently. She's not wearing much of anything either.
Okay, it's okay. You just let it out, hon. You just let it happen.
Jeez, Ishtar. Can't you make her throw up in the john? It stinks in here. How am I supposed to psych myself sexy in a room stinks of puke?
Leave her alone, Nancy.
5 minutes, girls. Last number of their sets just starting.
Roger, a big guy in a lounge suit, comes in, checking his watch.
What's the crowd like?
So-so. It's still early.
I checked it out earlier. Mostly college kids.
Venice, a pneumatic blonde, has such a perfect nose, lips, eyebrows, and body that there is nothing about her that is interesting.
They always get grabby and they're always cheap.
Okay, next set's Ishtar, Venice, Milai, Tiffany, and Lindy.
Roger, Tiffany's gonna have to skip this set. She's really sick.
Well, I'm not forcing her on, but hey, no dancing, no dollars. You got that, Tiffany? No passengers at Suffragette City.
Ishtar, I gotta go up. I'll be fine.
Get out of here, Roger.
And now Delirium reaches into Tiffany's mind, inhabiting her body, turns to Ishtar and says,
"You're the dancing lady, aren't you? You're really pretty."
Huh? Tiffany?
We'll see you soon.
Delirium lies on her bed, staring at the ceiling. She has bitten through her lower lip and blood runs down her chin. Her eyes are open, fixed, and glazed. In room 110, Morpheus is changed into an embroidered black cloak over a velvet jacket and leggings. He stands ramrod straight, his arms crossed.
Lucian?
My lord?
Lucian responds from Dream's palace library as if they were standing together in the motel room.
How do things go in my absence?
All goes well, my lord.
Ah, no difficulties?
No, lord. No difficulties whatsoever.
Ah, it's good.
Lucian, interrupted in mid-task, has a book in one hand and a half-filled bookshelf in front of him.
Well, should there be any reason to call me,
do not hesitate.
Of course, lord. And your quest, my lord. Are you near to finding your brother?
I have no desire to find my brother. His whereabouts are unimportant to me. I travel for the sake of traveling, and that is all. However, yes, Lucian, perhaps you should make inquiries. It occurs to me that it is possible that certain forces might be acting counter to our interests in this matter. If this is the case, I would know who, and I will know why.
I'll put something onto it immediately, Lord. It may not be my place to say this, and, well, I only met your brother on a handful of occasions. However, I liked him enormously, and I also respected him. I hope you do find him.
My brother abandoned his responsibilities. In retrospect, I suspect he told me that that was what he intended to do, but I did not listen, Lucien. Nor did I hear. Enough. We will speak again soon.
Morpheus lowers his head. He thinks back to his last encounter with destruction. London, 1675. Destruction, huge in a frock coat, raises his hat to Morpheus, who is dressed as an aristocrat of the period, sporting a long walking stick.
Sir.
Sir, you wish to talk to me?
It is so, my brother. Will you walk a while?
If that is what you wish.
A figure standing a little behind Morpheus moves forward.
You are familiar with the Corinthian?
My lord.
The Corinthian, in a white wig, wears the black spectacles of a blind man. He carries a white cane.
Indeed. Rare it is to see a nightmare abroad in daylight. A good day to ye, Corinthian.
And to you, great lord.
So, you accompany your lord this day?
On his sufferance. I had a yearning upon me to walk the earth that my lord Morpheus was good enough to grant.
'Tis good. Myself, I find I spend an ever-increasing amount of time in this mortal world. This promiscuous rabble, it speaks to me.
Sir.
Let me go, you rogue!
A short fellow with a scraggly beard has been shadowing them.
I shall have you in the pillory for this, where rotten eggs are plenty.
Sir, you have something of mine.
Something of yours? You're a lying, corpse-white ninny-hunter, a worm-picker and a snail-catcher. Hold your tongue, sir, or I'll wet my needle and sew your lips together. If the eyes are the windows of the soul, then your soul is as black as the devil's arsehole.
Enough. You are Dickon Hawksthorne.
You know me?
Aye, after a fashion. Tell me, Master Hawksthorne, was it wise to return from transportation? When they find you out, you'll swing for it.
That's a lie.
It is rare that I tell fortunes, but Tyburn Tree haunts your dreams, Master Hawksthorne, and it will continue to do so until you are hung there in chains without benefit of clergy.
Hawksthorne looks into the black pit of Morpheus's eye. He sees himself swinging from a gibbet in the reflection.
And your death shall come as a relief to you, for every night from now until then, you will dance on air with a hempen rope around your neck and the jeers and catcalls of all those you have ever cared for echoing in your ears.
Hawksthorne, shivering, angry and afraid, opens his clenched fist.
Here, take your damned stone, you wight! I will have none of it!
My ruby.
You could simply have taken it back from me. You did not need to do that.
I do not tell you how to conduct your affairs, brother. I must confess I see no reason for you to tell me how to conduct mine.
My affairs? Yes. I have given much thought to my affairs in recent years. Times are changing, my brother.
The trio enter the grounds of the small London palace, which is Arundel House, a half-timbered building with Gothic windows. It is set in its own grounds, a little way up the Thames, near the Church of St. Clement Danes.
And this is what the Invisible College has become. Have you been here before?
I do not believe so.
They are using reason as a tool.
Reason?
Reason. It is no more reliable a tool than instinct, myth, or dream. But it has the potential to be far more dangerous for them. This way.
Mm.
They enter the building, and Destruction guides Morpheus to the doorway of a large room with a stone-tiled floor. The Corinthian, playing blind with his white stick, walks just behind them.
They are exploring and creating, defining and dissecting.
So I see.
A man dressed in a white smock, covered in blood, his wig and coat hanging over the back of a large chair nearby, is using a sharp knife to dissect the cadaver of an orangutan. The creature's body is split from neck to crotch so that its internal organs are exposed. One arm has been skinned, and half of its face also.
That told me so. Oh! Oh, my heart, gentlemen. I did not hear you come in.
No.
Oh, but I presume you are here to examine my prize, good sirs. Oh, is he not fine? This is a specimen of Homo sylvestris, Orang-Outan, as he is called by the natives, the wild man of the woods.
Indeed.
He was brought alive to this country from the jungles of dark Borneo, and I paid the captain of the ship 25 guineas for him. I have dissected him with much care, for display to the society. Let me first draw your attention to the organs of generation.
Enough. I think perhaps you had better recollect urgent business in another room.
Oh, but forgive me. It has just swept into my mind that I need a certain volume that I must have mislaid in an adjacent room. Gentlemen, I must leave you for the nonce. Please, touch nothing.
The naturalist leaves, picking up his coat from the chair and hastily pulling on his wig with bloodied hands.
This is why you wish to speak to me, to show me that they are cutting up apes. That is nothing new. Do they think that they can impale the soul of it on their knives? That if they cut deep enough, they can extract its dreams, naked and writhing and screaming from its head? Reason is a flawed tool at best, my brother.
The Corinthian moves to inspect the dead orangutan. Destruction holds out one hand, palm up, towards Morpheus. From it, a beam of light shines upwards in a spectrum of color, illuminating the room.
One of them has prismed the sun's rays into beams of discreet color.
A pretty phenomenon indeed.
Behind them, the Corinthian is stroking the dead orangutan's cheek, just under the eye.
Mr. Newton, the young gentleman who ordered the rainbow, has much else to say on the subject of optics.
Indeed.
Are not light and gross bodies intraconvertible? He has already posed that question. Although, at present, it is but an idle notion, and I doubt he will return to it. He has too many other things to occupy his mind.
I confess, sir, I fail to understand you.
The relationship between matter and light. The transformation, one to the other.
The Corinthian has removed his dark glasses to reveal 3 bright smiles. One from his mouth, one from each of his eyes, which are small mouths. The teeth are sharp. Using the knife, he slices into the orangutan's face.
I have been here before. After a while, certain ideas become inevitable.
That is your territory, brother, not mine. So they begin to reorganize their lives on principles of reason. Well, what of that? It does not affect my domain, and it will do little to yours that will not change once more.
Oh, yes.
Behind them, the Corinthian is putting his black spectacles back on.
As you say, you have been here before, in many times, in many worlds.
Eon after eon, from the dawn days when time was fresh minted. And for how much longer?
As long as they need us.
Are not light and gross bodies intraconvertible? Alas, they are. And from that follows the flames, the Big Bang, the loud explosions.
Sir, my orangutan, where are his eyes? Did you observe what happened to his eyes?
Eyes? I see no eyes, my good man.
How can you, sir? You are blind.
Aye. Then follows my time. my brother. The Age of Fire and Flame.
Hello? Anyone in there?
The firefighter breaks in through the motel room door, smoke and flame billowing in around him. Morpheus is standing in the room as before, lost in memory.
Over here, fella, quickly!
Your pardon, I was just remembering.
Move! Come on, you numbnut son of a bitch! The whole place is going up! Move!
Ruby.
Will you move it? Come on! Out through the fire exit, back there. Leads onto the parking lot. Move it!
Get that hose in here! We got the occupant clear!
Before I leave, do you have any idea how the fire started?
You people are just gonna kill me, you know that? Yeah, we think we know. Buddy, cover through! Gangway!
The firefighter passes them, carrying Ruby in his arms, dead and burnt, with half her hair and half her face gone. The sight reminds Morpheus of something he saw long ago.
Lady in the room next to yours, smoking in bed, falls asleep, cigarette falls onto the bed, woof! It was just lucky the night porter saw the smoke coming under the door and called us when he did.
My sister, have you seen her? She would probably have appeared to be a young woman with rather wild hair.
There is only one other person in this wing. She's already out in the parking lot. Look, I hate to disturb you, and only if it's not too much trouble, but will you kindly get the hell out of here, or am I gonna have to bust you in the mouth and carry you out myself?
That will not be necessary. I can find my own way out. And thank you. You have been most helpful.
Outside in the parking lot, Delirium leans on the rear fender of their little convertible. She wears a baggy pullover down to her knees. It has holes in it.
Hey, I lost my bubble mixture.
Ruby is dead, my sister. They tell me that the fire began in her room. This may, of course, have been an accident. However, she was assigned to guard us and to take us from place to place. And thus we had responsibility for her. We failed her.
Any more for the emergency room?
Not this one. She's been toasted.
As I say, it might be a simple accident that Ruby's room was where the fire started. And it might be coincidence that our first quarry chose yesterday to be hit by a falling building. Reason was never an important part of my dominion, but certain conclusions become inescapable. Do you understand what I'm trying to tell you?
Ruby's dead.
Yes.
Oh. Oh, wow. That means I get to drive.
It's a hot summer day. Ishtar walks down a sleazy, garbage-strewn street to the townhouse hotel. She's slim, wearing jeans and a t-shirt. She carries a brown paper bag filled with groceries. The hotel has a paper sign scotch-taped over its main entrance, advertising rooms for rent. Ishtar climbs the stairs, picking her way past the rat droppings and the squashed cockroaches.
Tiffany, you up?
Tiffany slept in her makeup. Her hair is an uncombed bird's nest, and she wears a long t-shirt as a nightdress. She looks as pale as she did last night when she was throwing up in the sink at Suffragette City.
Hey, Tiffany.
Oh, hi, Ishtar.
After last night, I was kind of worried about you. I brought you some food. Bread, milk, eggs, protein powder, if you aren't up for solid stuff. and fresh-squeezed orange juice brimming with Mother Nature's own vitamin C.
Oh.
Now you say, gee, that's awful nice of you, Ishtar. Why don't you come in?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I wasn't thinking. Come in. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Tiffany's rented room has peeling wallpaper stained with black mold and a little kitchenette in one corner where Ishtar unpacks the grocery bag. A few copies of the Weekly World News and the Enquirer are scattered among heaps of clothes, day clothes and performing clothes, mostly unwashed. Tiffany stands in front of her mirror, pulling down the skin at the bottom of one eye, staring at the pink-red membrane.
Ishtar, do you think I'm attractive?
Sure, Tiff. What's not to like?
Oh.
You got any clean plates around, or do I have to wash up for you, too?
I'm not hungry.
I'll make you some breakfast. You'll be hungry when you smell it. How do you want your eggs?
Unfertilized. That's a joke.
Ha ha. A bowl or a junk? Ah!
Hey, Ishtar. Did I ever tell you about this girl I met when I was dancing in Portland? She was a dancer, and she was shooting up. And the management told her that she had to get off or get out because the needle marks were grossing people out. So you know what she did?
Scrambled eggs and toast. That's protein and carbs, okay? No, what did she do?
She started shooting up in her eyes. Not into the eyeball, into the red stuff underneath. Can you imagine doing that? Sticking a needle straight in under there? Can you imagine it? The things we do to be loved. Shit, I hate needles.
So what happened to her?
I don't know. Probably wound up in a landfill somewhere. You don't do that shit for life expectancy, you know?
Here you go. Eat it up.
I'm not hungry, Ishtar.
You've got to work tonight, Tiff. Once you get some food into you, you'll be fine.
Okay.
You have to put it in your mouth, not just stare at it. Oh, you really weren't hungry, were you? Okay, let's clean you up and try the protein powder.
The Sandman, Act 3, Episode 8. Brief Lives, Part 5.
The things we do to be loved.
Her hands do not go to the moon.
The driving instructor.
Tiffany watches 1.
White knights and or pond scum.
Are Dalmatians flowers?
Nancy displays her erudition.
Wham bam, thank you, ma'am.
Tiffany watches 2.
Delirium's hair blows in the wind. Both her eyes, one green, one blue, are wide, and the expression on her face is a combination of rapture and concentration. She's having a wonderful time, driving the little convertible, weaving in and out of the highway traffic.
I'm good at this, aren't I? I'm really good. I knew I'd be good at driving.
Morpheus sits in the passenger seat, observing the mayhem with detached interest.
Dream, look at me! Look at me driving!
I see you, Delirium. Are you certain that we are going the correct way?
Sure, I think. No, if this car had great big giant runny legs like a centipede, it could run very, very fast and get there quicker. Can I?
No.
You never let me do anything.
I let you drive.
Why is that car making that noise? Woo-woo-woo-woo, and flashing its lights at us.
I have no idea. Perhaps the driver wishes to talk with you.
Oh, neat. Okay, let's stop and say hi.
That was fun.
This person does not look amused.
You, out of the car. Keep your hands where I can see them.
You mean not make my hands go to the moon or anywhere?
I am not in the mood for jokes. Now out!
Oh, yes.
What the Sam Hill's the idea, huh? I've been trying to get you to pull over for 5 miles now. You've been driving all over the road. You've driven through every red light. Listen, you better have a good attorney, kid, because your ass is green and growing. Let's see your driver's license.
Huh?
Do you got a driver's license?
I'm a very good driver, Patrolman Flaherty.
You're the single worst driver I've seen in 8 years on Highway Patrol, lady. And right now, you're in it up to your ears.
I think you're nasty to me now. I think you'll have invisible insects all over you now for all your life and forever and always.
Huh? Listen, kid. Jeez! Get off me! Ha! Shit! Get off of me!
Was that really entirely necessary?
I don't tell you how to run. What you do. Do it, you know. You've done lots worse than that. Anyway, lots and lots and lots and lots and lots. I don't want to drive anymore. Let's just go poof and be there. I can go through Tiffany's head. She's this girl. I know how. Poof.
I do not think so, sister. We began this journey in the waking world. We shall finish it in the waking world. However... yes. Matthew?
The Dreaming. Matthew the Raven stands on a small pile of rocks near the entrance to Eve's cave.
Matthew?
A faint, ghostly Morpheus appears, looking down at Matthew.
Boss? Is that you?
I'm afraid so.
The raven flutters up to perch on Morpheus's transparent arm.
Matthew, when you were a man, were you able to drive a motor vehicle?
Could I? Hey, I killed myself drunk driving, didn't I? I mean, the first time.
I am not convinced that is any recommendation. However...
Oh, God! Make it stop!
Matthew enters the waking world, still perched on Morpheus's arm, as large and solid as he was moments ago, in the Dreaming.
Matthew, this is my sister, the Lady Delirium. Delirium, this is Matthew. He will advise you on the protocol of vehicle management.
You're a big black raven.
Yeah. You're Delirium. I've heard about you. You know, you're the first one of the boss's family I have ever met. Except for the foxy chick with all the hair, of course.